Time for us to get some knowledge, you know, some insider dirt, like we get when we turn to the talented Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, who joins us this afternoon. Hello, Chad.
I thought you were reviving the inside track at the Herald there for a second.
Yeah. Hey, I got my book. Thank you very much.
Oh, you bet. I got my mug. Thank you very much. I've been drinking lots of Dunkin' coffee out of it the last couple of days.
Excellent.
Much appreciated.
Very heartfelt inscription in the book. I think it said, "You host a show that I'm on. Lucky you, Chad Finn." I thought that was great.
Did I sign it to Javier?
Actually, there was a blank, and it said, "Fill in your name."
I can't tell you how many books I've ruined by, like, writing, spelling a word wrong or writing the wrong name at the beginning or something. I got a whole box of them here of ones that I was sending out to people that I messed up in one way or the other.
Listen, the hard part was supposed to be the writing, not the signing.
Yeah, who knew? The other thing is, too, when I sign them, I forget how to write my name sometimes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's very weird. You start thinking about it.
Right. Is it what? I thought the H came third. Oh, no.
They could have learned that at Morse High School, but I guess not.
No. Well, let's see. Where to begin this afternoon? Let's start with the Red Sox. High hopes. Won the first two games of that road trip. And the optimists thought, well, here they go. Get themselves right back in the thick of the wild card race just in time for the trade deadline. But then they just became what they've been all year, up and down, consistently inconsistent.
Yeah, they are what we thought they were. They are what they are. We take a couple of those NFL coach cliches and apply them there. But, it's just it's because of the way they're constructed. They have some high-quality players and some interesting pieces on their roster, and then they just have some gaping holes that they've never really fixed, or they're hoping get fixed with the progress of players, you know, thinking of Tristan Casas there and the improvement they expect and hope to get from him over the season. And so that leads to inconsistency. And they'll win three in a row and lose two or three and lose two or three again. And it's how things are going to be. It's the way they're constructed. It's not as if this is a really talented team that has just struggled for the first half of the year to find consistency. It's just they're a 500 team, maybe a little bit above, and they're playing like it. And we're seeing the patterns that they really should have based on the way the roster's built.
The season has allowed them to get some guys in the lineup who have shown some improvement. Devers has done what he would do, although the batting average is disappointing this year. But on the outfield, Duran has certainly looked like the guy they thought he would be a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to watch him. I mean, everything he hits in the outfield is a double, which is pretty remarkable. I think he might be faster than Ellsbury. Ellsbury was crazy fast. And he's not a little guy either. He's 6'4". I mean, it's striking how tall he is when you see him in person. So it's fun to watch him emerge. He's not a young player. You wish he was 23 rather than, 26? Is he 27 yet? So it really has to happen now for him, and it seems like it is. The big difference between what's happened in the past with him when he's come up and what we've seen this season is he's kind of found a baseline. It's always been up and down, these little bursts of where you see his athleticism and his ability, and then he'll fall into a real rut and struggle to come out of it, and maybe has to go back down to AAA to straighten it out. And seems like here he's figured out how to adjust this time around and not let those ruts get too deep. And that's what you wanted to see. So I think what's going to happen, Rich, probably they trade Adam Duvall. A lot of interest in him around baseball. I know one of the Philadelphia paper wrote that Dave Dombrowski should go out and get him for the Phillies just, I think, today or yesterday's paper. So we'll probably see some guys move on. But, you know, Duran deserves a chance to play a little bit, especially considering this team's not going to accomplish anything of any importance. You might as well really find out what you have with him.
And I don't know what his future is, but we're so used to not seeing a lot of speed on this Red Sox team. It's been a lot of fun watching David Hamilton out there the other night when he scored from second on a bad pickoff.
Yeah, he's a lightning bolt. People in Portland got to see that last year, and he set the franchise record for stolen bases. Questionable defensive player, but he's gotten better in a couple of aspects this year. They're very happy with the progress he's made at the plate and being more selective and hitting the ball a little bit more pop when he does hit it. And apparently he's improved a little bit defensively, but we probably would have seen him earlier in the season if they felt he was capable of filling that void at shortstop. And it's certainly fun to watch the kid run the bases. And it's kind of funny thinking about some of the trades that we perceive as really bad ones for Chaim Bloom. I think the full story is a little bit untold on a couple of them. I mean, the Benintendi trade doesn't look so bad now because he's really, as much as he tormented them in the series, he hasn't hit with any power. And they got Josh Winkowski in that deal, who's been a very good pitcher this year. And then, of course, they got Hamilton from the Brewers and their Hunter Renfro deal, which everybody thinks of as them just getting Jackie Bradley back. But if Hamilton ends up being a contributor as a utility guy and base thief at the major league level, that's not a bad return. Even though they never really replaced Renfro at all last year.
How have the ratings been on Nesson so far this year?
Okay, yeah, better than last year. Back in the Manny Pedro days, in the height of the Evil Empire and the rivalry and all that, they would get 14 sometimes on Nesson for certain games. And now down in that 2-3 range, but not like it was back in 2020. I think they got a 2.16, somewhere around there during the pandemic. It was a little bit higher the last couple of years, and it's a little bit better this year. But the benefit from that, YouTube TV is not part of their not something that Nesson's available on, so that hurts a little bit because that's measured in the Nielsen ratings now, and they don't really, you don't see the numbers from what they get from their Nesson 360 app and the ratings. But seems like they're doing pretty well, and there's at least some interest in this team.
Poor Dave O'Brien. It seems like every series he's got somebody new in the booth with him. And then last week, and I'm sure you heard about this from people, the Bill Burr adventure. I like Bill Burr, and I thought he was good and funny for about two or three innings, but then he just kept on, and I thought it brought out the worst in Kevin Youkilis. As often happens when you get a comedian in the room, everybody thinks they're funny too.
Yeah, it was funny because I wasn't watching the game that night. I was doing something else for work. I can't remember what it was, but it might have been Celtics column or something like that. And so I wasn't watching the game, and I get a message from one of our news side editors at the Globe that night saying, you might have to write a story about this. Bill Burr just made a second joke about killing his wife. And I was like, what's going on this broadcast? I knew he was going to be on. So I got home and watched the last couple of innings, and I was surprised he was still there, like you said. And also, it was kind of a turnoff, and I think he's hilarious, but it was kind of a turnoff that he really just wanted the game to be over. I don't know why they kept him there, but he was, going to kind of joke about how the game needs to end. This is going on too long and all this. I think a two or three inning stretch is probably the way to go.
Chad Finn with us here on Downtown. Celtics, quite a start to their offseason with the big trade. What are your thoughts on Marcus Smart? It seems like everybody loved his passion, but won't miss screaming at the TV when he fires up another three.
It was tense, wasn't it? Watching him a lot. But he's one of my probably all-time favorite Celtics just because of his personality and that he cared about being here and really embraced the community and just a genuinely good guy. But if you're looking at it from a purely unsentimental basketball perspective, which is Brad Stevens' job, it's a trade you really can't say no to. Porzingis is a better player. And if you look at almost every significant trade Brad's made so far, he's gotten the best player back, whether it was Derek White for pieces, Brogdon for pieces, Horford for an ailing Kemba Walker. He's made a habit of that, and that's how you build a team in the NBA. And he did it here again and got two first-round picks. He's turned one of those first picks into a bunch of seconds, which have real currency now with the new CBA coming in. And the other first-round pick, it could be really interesting because it's the Warriors next year. And if you know, some napkins to Curry, or there, or something goes on with that team again, that's a better pick than you think. So I'm sad to see him go. I love the guy. I think maybe it needed to happen for this team to take the next step, but I do have some concerns about where the what the roster looks like right now.
Yep, still some holes to fill there, it would seem. You wrote about the coverage of the NBA draft severely lacking something that you think would be a given, basketball talk.
Yeah, it was very weird. And I think I heard from so many people on this as it was happening, and then after I wrote that column, that they were just frustrated that they didn't really talk about the players. They did a lot of interviews with the families, which, yeah, you do that on the draft, that's fine. But an example is Cam Whitmore, the Villanova kids projected maybe to go number 4, and he slid to 20, and they didn't really talk about it. What happened? Was medicals bad? Did he have terrible workouts or interviews? Nothing in that regard, and that was kind of par for the course the whole night. And then Jay Billis is one of their most established analysts of college basketball, and it's been part of the draft coverage forever. It was kind of marginalized on the broadcast. J.J. Redick did most of the talking. Andrea Carter, who I don't think is that familiar yet to ESPN viewers, did a lot of the talking. And it was just a very disjointed production. And they've had some shakeups in personnel there. And we all know about the layoffs that the ESPN has had. Mm. And their NBA studio producer, the person overseas, he's higher up in management and producer, named David Roberts, got a promotion last week. And I wondered if somehow that had some effect on the preparation, because I've never seen a draft show quite like that, where they didn't really talk that much about the draft.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because you saw so many guys get drafted who didn't play college basketball here in America, and I wonder if the average fan can feel that connection, at least, you know, at least in the college football or the NFL draft. You've watched those guys play college football for 4 years, so even the armchair quarterbacks feel like they know something about them.
Yeah, it was interesting because they got their best numbers in terms of viewership, ESPN and ABC combined, that they ever have. But there was one reason for that, Victor Wembanyama. Mm. People wanted to see him, and most talked about prospect coming in the league since LeBron 20 years ago, so that's going to draw, but I should have looked into it. I didn't, but I was curious. It would be interesting to see how the numbers declined as the night went on, because you know, they did pretty well. I think they got 1.2 million viewers for the second round, which is pretty good. But really, the interest was right at the top of the draft, and after that, the program itself certainly didn't do a lot to keep people entertained.
I only like drafts where the crowd raucously boos the commissioner every time they step on stage.
Yeah, I know. Who does that the most? Is that, I mean, Bettman gets booed at everything.
Right.
Goodell gets booed and tries to pretend like he likes it, but he doesn't.
No.
David Stern loved it and gave it right back. And I think everybody kind of likes Adam Silver for the most part.
Right.
Yeah, he's not getting the boost compared to some of those other guys.
Chad Finn of the Boston Globe with us here on Downtown. Chad, good talking with you as always. Thanks for checking in, and we'll visit with you again soon.
Thanks, Rich. Going to go have some more coffee from my Hall of Fame mug.
Oh, enjoy it. Now, when you does it taste better looking at your name on that list?
Well, no, because Gary Tangway's name is also on
there. Oh, yeah.
So it's
yeah.
Very bitter, really. But then I see Mike Farrell. And people like that, John Davidson. So then it's all good.
All right. Yeah. Just, you know, you can take a marker. You can take a marker and just, you know, cover up Gary's name. He'd be fine with that.
Maybe I'll do that before I post the picture.
There you go. Perfect. Right. Thanks, Chad.
Way to go. You're right.
Chad Finn of the Globe on Downtown.